You're listening to This is Yoga Therapy. I'm your host, Michelle Lawrence, and I've had the opportunity to interview many of those who are making a difference at the intersections of yoga and health. And I'm here to share with you their stories and conversations. Thanks for listening. In today's episode, I interview Durga Leela. Durga is a yoga therapist and yoga teacher. She's an Ayurvedic practitioner and the author of the new book entitled Yoga of Recovery, Integrating Yoga and Ayurveda with Modern Recovery Tools for Addiction. By offering an empowering personal program of self-care in recovery, the book provides guidance for everyone affected by widespread modern addictiveness. And we're going to talk about this a bit on the podcast today. It's so great to have you here, Durga, and congrats on your new book. I know it's been a long time in the making.
Thank you, Michelle. And yes, it's been a long time in the making. But what that means is I've tread the boards kind of thing. I've been out teaching in yoga therapy schools and in yoga recovery retreats. And so the voice of the people are included in this book. And that's what I think makes it relevant, because the healing has to happen around the narrative of the way we're experiencing the addictions today. So I hope that makes it a little bit more relevant and helpful for people.
Yeah, I love that part of the book. Definitely it does. Let's start by having you share what you mean by widespread modern addictiveness, and perhaps another term which I've heard you mention, which is the quote, one addiction process, unquote. Can you tell us what you mean by those terms, addictiveness and one addiction process?
Yeah, I'll do my best to. The phrase one addiction process I take from Gabor Maté, because he is a doctor that is dealing with addictions, usually substance use disorder, heroin use disorder, but he was able to correlate that back to his own use disorder, which he describes as like retail therapy around classical CDs. And some of the definitions that we work with on what is addiction, and that's always a really interesting question that we pose to the people in front of us, like, what is your definition of addiction? And we get so many different answers, and it shows us a little bit where the person is being informed from. And some of the ones that we offer are things like when more is never enough. Gabor Maté says, it's hard to get enough of something that almost works. So things like that. So we are coming at it from much more of a lived, felt sensation of what it's like to try and get our needs met, our needs at material, emotional, psychological, and even spiritual levels in the world that we live in, surrounded by the people that we are surrounded by. And so the widespread modern addictiveness is to try and get people to understand that my work, this book, the people that are showing up, they're not classical alcoholics or addicts. Some of them have alcohol use disorder, some of them have substance use disorder, but it's usually combined with a whole range of other behaviors and involvement with substances that are not classified as addictions, but provide a certain level of like suffering and misery and unmanageability on a daily basis. But also they're not going to like pick up the phone and call their rehab and book themselves a bed in a rehab. They're not at that emergency level for the acute care model that our Western model is, but they are living this a life of unmanageability, or just feeling like they'll never catch up with themselves. They'll never meet their own best intentions. And a lot of it comes down to this addictiveness. And what I would say that is just pursuing a kind of settled sense of self outside of ourself, attached to our labels, our job, our titles, our money in the bank, how we look, like image, all of that, who we hang out with, where we're welcome in this world. So that's a little bit of what I mean by widespread modern addictiveness. It's to like try and open up the idea of not all alcohol and drugs.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And I think it can speak to such a wider audience of folks who are suffering from what you might want to call self-destructive behaviors or those things that we do to fill a void that may not necessarily, like you say, require rehab, but can be so widespread and problematic for so many folks. And I think by opening up that definition and broadening who needs to hear this, therefore your book can reach so many more folks too.
Yeah, I do hope so. And I think you said self-destructive behaviors. I also use mm-hmm. the term self-negating behaviors mm-hmm. because sometimes mm-hmm. it's like there really is a big part of yoga recovery that says addiction is about our relationships, our relationship with self, our relationship with others, our relationship with our environment, our relationship with our own philosophy of what gives our life meaning and purpose. And so we have a bit of self-negating, like thought and emotional level that's going on. And I think this comes from a young age, trying to fit in with the dominant model. And I think that's been loosening up, like who we are as women, who we are as people of color, who we are as gender fluid people, who we are as employees or self-employed people in this world where there is no like long-term job security and things. So we need to constantly reinvent ourselves. And yet I think a lot of the time we're coming from old stories and we're comparing ourselves to those old stories, those old descriptions of normal. And I think Gabor Maté's new book that will come out this year is The Myth of Normal. And I learned about that early in recovery because I think in my shares, I wasn't really aware of this, but I would often bring up the word normal. Like it was like an aspiration of mine to be normal. And some of the people within my recovery pathway would come up and say, just want to get you to back off from the normal. It's like, there's no such thing. And so everything is done with humor if it's done well for healing, I think. And that kind of had me inquire, yeah, like, what is it that I am that I'm trying to get myself to reach to be that then I will consider myself normal? And so I changed that into like just more whole, more fully myself. And Ayurveda has this word, which I just, I loved from the get-go, which is svasta, which is sva, self, and sta, stability. So stability in the self, to be established in the self. And that's one of their terms for health. And so I'm not going for normal. I'm going for svasta, to be established in myself.
Yeah, that's a beautiful term and so well put there. I think that this talk around self-destructive and versus self-negating, is that what you said, is kind of eye-opening for me in a way. And it's subtle a lot of times, these terms that we use, right? But they speak to something like that, speaks to a much larger picture that you just described.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that self-negating often happens in who we mold ourselves to be around the people we hope to get love and acceptance from. And so that is a lot, it's the underlying conversation of everything within yoga recovery, which is the dependency on people and therefore our tendency toward codependency. So I will show up and as I have a primal and fundamental need to love and be loved, then I will sometimes warp my own sense of self to be acceptable to you, whether it's someone in a romantic relationship, in my family, in my community. And so therefore, I will never fully express myself because I'm molding and curtailing aspects of myself to fit in. And I think the fit in and the facade conversation is like we're hiding in plain sight. it's an odd thing because when you do it, you can never really be known because you're presenting a false self. And I'd say that was like, it's one of the summaries of how I experienced my own addictiveness. You know, I had my own creative urgings. Society kind of curtailed that. My family curtailed it. What university, what school I was accepted into or I could even apply to with my nationality and my background. And so I kind of went out into the world and I decided that security was my number one thing because I didn't want to be dependent on other people. I had to be independent. And so I formed a self that could succeed in the world, but it didn't really represent the true inner self, me, like level of my own felt self and who I really was. I pursued external success, a professional level, even at a relationship level, like the people I picked to be in relationship with. And so partly when I was describing it in a recovery conference once, I was describing that the further I got away from my own inner sense of who I was, the further that got away from my presented self, then that was the measure of my suffering, that gap between who I really was and who I was presenting or pretending to be. Because even when people were interested in me, they were interested in something that I was projecting. So they didn't really get to see me. And so therefore, I could never really feel truly connected with the other. That's some deeper thought around like what these issues really are. That's why I like the yoga pathway, because it really gives you depth to explore who we are, because we have mistaken things like glamour for beauty. And so we dress it up to look a certain way, whereas if we just presented who we are, then you and I are both nourished by that, because the seeing and the knowing of the true individual, it's such an intimate gift to offer. So our yoga of recovery work is quite intimate.
A lot of good stuff right there. So I'd love for folks to kind of peek into who you are a bit more and also peek into the book and what it lays out. So really at the very beginning of the book, in the introduction, you start with a quote by Rolf Gates, his Meditation on the Mat book, I believe. And it reads, "Our understanding of our suffering defines the nature of our solution." And you share then a bit about your own story and upbringing, being the child of an alcoholic and then becoming an alcoholic yourself in your teens. And you talk about how your suffering led you to AA, yoga, and Ayurveda. And now your life's work embodies those three modalities and more. Can you expand upon this a bit? What is yoga of recovery? Just at a broader sense, like what do you bring to the table, if you will, in yoga of recovery?
So let me attempt an answer to that today. The first thing you bring up is Rolf's phrase, "Our understanding of our suffering defines the nature of our solution." And my suffering as a child was watching my mother's self-destructive behavior and being powerless to do anything about it. So when I talk about what I went out to achieve in the world, that was my mission, to save my mother, that if I could go out from the house and get a degree, get a job, do all the things you're supposed to do as a young adult, then those actions and the results of those actions would bring her better health, like fundamental, deep-seated codependency, and they didn't. Yeah. But when I sought help from the medical model, it also was not available to us. We were told that old thing, the alcoholic has to want to stop drinking. And so it was like, well, what about the other people that live with the alcoholic? Do they count? Because they definitely want her to stop drinking. So that powerlessness, that unmanageability, that was all part of my life. And it is hard to summarize all that. But what I mean by that is also, people have a many multi-layered perspective on what the problem is, and so therefore what the solution is. And we do have a medical model that makes it very finite. Currently, it says addiction is a chronic relapsing brain disease. And so therefore, to repair the brain, chemicals can be given, pharmaceutical drugs can be given to repair the brain. And so if that's your understanding of addiction, then there is definitely a solution at the brain chemical level. But that was never my understanding. So I didn't walk around in the suffering that was my own addiction, the addictions and mental illness of the people around me, both in my family and in the corporate life that I worked in. I watched someone that worked beside me committed suicide. Another person had a very obvious eating disorder. And I didn't look at them and think, well, there's something wrong with your brain chemistry. That's not the narrative that we tend to live out here, like sharing our life and our love and our hopes with other people. And so therefore, like one of the questions I pose in Yoga of Recovery is after I ask, what's your definition of addiction? And so we do get, oh, it's a chronic relapse and brain disease. It's like, okay, good. Then we ask this question, what is your felt experience of addiction in your life, in the lives of others around you? And as we ask that, then the person taps into their heart space and we ask them to think of three words, kind of describe their feeling around addictiveness in their life. And then we've created a little graphic, which is called A World of Suffering, because in there we have betrayal, abandonment, lack of trust, anger, fear, pain, like all those words. So then we're really in the emotions of it. And then partly what I'll say there is, and it's my best way of summarizing a hot debate about the diagnostic criteria of mental health and the thing that's arrived with it, which is this idea that it can be solved purely from or majority from a pharmaceutical solution, that we summarize that addiction diagnosed as a brain disease experienced as a heartache or heartbreak. And so the work of Yoga of Recovery is to deal with the healing of the heart, the healing of living in this modern addicted world and finding some peace and calm and serenity amongst it, because we may change, but the world isn't changing quite as rapidly as many of us would hope it would. And so we have to find the tools that stabilize us within the storm of the modern addictiveness. And for how does that look in my life this week? So in my life this week, I got a call on Monday to say a 52-year-old was dead, and it's a direct result of addiction. So years of alcohol and drug use created colon cancer, and the person died 52 years old, so has left a pretty young family behind. And so that repercussion, that ripple effect, that will go on, because people, they have it in their mind that maybe if they'd done this, maybe if they hadn't said that, all those things that happen when we lose someone. And it's around especially our reactions to other people's self-destructive behavior, because we want them to stop. And so therefore, we often warp our own behavior. We might start to try and coerce and control and manipulate and martyr. Like there's a whole range of behavior. And then we have regrets about that. So sometimes, like I really see that is we fail to see the person, because all we've managed to meet is the feeling repelled by the actions that are taken under the influence of that disease. So it creates a great deal of separation and regret and recrimination and, yeah, all of that. It's a big thing to deal with. So everyone who deals with it needs a level of support that isn't just a pharmaceutical solution to repair the chemicals in our brain. That's not big enough. So we need to kind of creatively inquire as to what we need today. And I say today because recovery is known to be a bit of a lifetime journey. It's not something that you have the flu and you take the medicine and then you don't have the flu again. It's wrapped right into the layers of our being and our reactiveness, the way we relate to people. Some of the ways that they talk about it is we become people addicted or people avoidant or even just ambivalent around our engagement with life and other people because we're so wounded from previous experiences that a lot of us start to shut down, numb ourselves out. There's a whole load of things that we use to help us with that. So does that answer some of that?
Yeah, I mean, what it speaks to is that addiction is just such a wide-ranging problem, meaning it affects the person on so many levels, and it affects interpersonal relationships on so many levels. Therefore, the solution needs to become more comprehensive than something that's targeted at the brain. I mean, that's like a really simple summary of some things that you just said. And therefore, like yoga recovery looks at yoga and Ayurveda and modern recovery tools and where the overlaps are and where the differences are to kind of help the person on that path and in their lives in relation to others to have something that can help them recover, repair, and live more healthfully.
I need to just add this because you've summarized it beautifully, and it is the dignity of choice. That if you understand it from a spiritual perspective, let's have that conversation. If you understand it from a relational perspective, then let's go into that. If you understand it from a brain chemical, then let's go into that too, because the ancient healing system of Ayurveda incorporates all those levels, mind, body, emotion, and spirit. So we're not reductionistic. And we don't need to lay an idea upon you that you are not yet ready to work with.
Yeah.
So some people come to us and they say, I'd like some physical yoga. Let's show me a 15-minute routine. I want nothing to do with any concepts of spirituality or higher power. Nothing of that. And we can still help you. Some people come and they'll put it down to, I need a supplement and I need the right diet. And so we can have that conversation. And then somebody might come to us in a kind of existential crisis about like, what is the purpose of life? How do I hold on to something that gives me the ability to get up? And then we can come at it from that philosophical perspective and have that conversation. And what's important for me is that we are people-based. So we're waiting to hear the narrative of the person speaking to us. And waiting to hear where their invitation for a pathway of healing is opening. And you can always tell that in a person's conversation if you listen. And I think that's one of the things that we base our introduction on. So when I was at a National Ayurvedic Medical Association conference, Robert Svoboda was one of the speakers. And he said, it is the nature of humans to create narrative. As healers, we listen deeply and then help reweave the narrative. And I think healing is honoring the story, that there's a point to us, there's a purpose for us going through the things that we go through. And as we sit in circle and share our stories, there's a great amount of wisdom can be gleaned. And that is never a bold intention to now tell you this today so that you may be fixed and repaired and cured and go on your way. I tell this story today because it's a part of my ongoing healing. And then it's an honor and a gift to receive some feedback that my story helps someone else recognize their pitfalls or their pathway to solution. So it's not this protocol that has to be laid upon someone and then you have to move your way through that and be compliant so that you can be better. That probably is an injury, really, to approach healing in that way. And then I also have to say there's different stages of healing. So the acute care model, the rehabs, the medication-assisted treatment, I am glad they are there because with the state of the mind, emotion, and physical system, people aren't ready for that healing conversation until you can stabilize them. then it's integrative, that we honor what the Western medical model offers as somewhat of like emergency response to a crisis in our communities. But then when the person is back in community and the people are waiting there to receive that person and do their own healing, then there is this issue with over-professionalization of the care of our like lifestyle stuff. Like, we can't constantly bring that to the licensed professional within a 1 hour conversation or the medical doctor within a 5 minute visit and expect that to be resolved. So I think a lot of yoga recovery is to reintroduce the continuum of care, the conversation, and the circle of sharing and caring. And it's deeply stable in the Vedic tradition of healing, which is thousands of years old, evidence-based through many generations.
Yeah, you said a lot of important things there. And I really like specifically in the beginning where you talked about how you could take any part of those things, right? And meet the person. Like when we think about yoga therapy, there's oftentimes an in, right? The in with one person could be the body, and the in with another person might be the mind. And the more that we get to know about the individual and hear their story, like you said, the more likely we are able to discern, understand what their in is. And they may have over time a need for all of it, right? But it doesn't have to be an all or nothing approach. Like, you have to take all of the aspects that are available to you in order to move forward. It's not necessarily the case. So I appreciate you making that distinction because it's more inclusive that way too. And it's not a method. It's not a sequence, yoga of recovery, right? It's not a set of yoga poses. And oftentimes yoga therapy really is not that either. And I think it's hard for some folks who are kind of getting their head around what yoga therapy is in general to think beyond sort of the sequence of things that happen on a yoga mat. It could be one part, like you said, of someone's program in yoga recovery.
And it often is, and certainly we have represented yoga as a physical practice, and that has some people staying out away from yoga because they don't fit in with that thin, flexible model that has been shown for decades from the yoga media images. But even I definitely am not that sort of person, but I did go to a yoga class and I recognized I felt better. And I'm going to say I felt closer to who I hoped to be. And so therefore, physical yoga was my way into the bigger, more depth conversation that yoga offers us as to who we are. It's important at the physical level because there is an aspect of our recognition that obviously the tangible is much more real to us. And so therefore, because of the nature of addiction, like there is denial, for instance. So we can be healing addiction on the mat without having to call it addiction. A person can show up at a yoga class and they have not made any admission of struggling. And maybe they'll go back to yoga like I did. I did like a 6 weeks course in it, and it was healing the addictiveness that was alive and well within me. And I continued to go back to it, but I also needed more. And so I needed to make the admission that there was a particular suffering that I was aware of, that I was ashamed to admit it. Because it really had a level of stigma. And then personally, it was like the thing that I'd fought against my whole life. And in my own sense of self, like, this cannot possibly be me. Like, I cannot possibly now become the thing that I have so, I'm going to use a strong word, hated. So like, there's a whole huge aspect of the mental emotional level that cannot be voiced. Like, I can voice some of this because I'm 22 years in recovery and using these tools. But at the time, you would not have been able to get me to intellectually tell you what was going on with me. There was just no words for it. And to the point that I couldn't speak about it at all. So even when I needed to speak, I would do something else. Like I would swallow painkillers and attempt suicide rather than speak about the despair that I was in. So because I've been through that, I think it helps me recognize that the perverted way that we are calling out for help, but it's not this intellectual, rational mind that comes forth and says, you know, I think I might be experiencing a problem here and I'd like your medical assistance. We often laugh in yoga recovery because when they ask about your pain level on a scale of 0 to 10, and then the answer from people with an experience of pain is, why are you giving me a math problem right now? There's a phrase in recovery that says religion is for those who fear hell and spirituality is for those that have been to hell and don't want to go back there. So there's just that difference of like who we are with each other once we become able to be real and share what it is that we're really feeling. And there's a real finding each other there. And this is something that's come up because my husband was listening to the audio of my book, and he, you know, he lives with me and has done for 20 odd years, and he drives a bulldozer out there working for the Forest Service and fighting fires. And so he comes home at night, he's like, I'm enjoying the book. And I say, so what is it in the book that you're enjoying? Just give me the thing that struck you today. And what he said the other day was an aspect of the book where I say, we're living in a world where we're competing and craving. We see ourselves in this comparison to what's around us, like the media and other people. And in recovery, we say comparing is despairing. And so there's something about actually sitting in a room, peer-supported recovery groups make up the bulk of the community's response to our addictiveness. And that's not just 12-step programs. There's other recovery pathways. And most of them employ this technique of just speaking with each other and without interrupting, but being guided by stable principles of spirituality or behavior and action to take, and also being guided intimately by another so that we can form a trust bond with someone. And so that idea of hearing people speak from that level, it allows us to be who we are. We start to lift those, that suppression and repression that we've done to fit in, to be who we think we need to be so that people will love and accept us. So it's a real freedom to realize there are people who will hold you in high positive regard, regardless of what you have done. And often because they've done similar things. And here we are, we're still here and we all have a second chance. We have many, many chances. Every day is a new chance.
I'd love to give the listeners a little bit more insight into what's in the book. So I see that you have really laid out some important concepts from Ayurveda, such as the gunas, the senses. You talk about the doshas and the addictive tendencies of the various doshas. And you include these student stories from, like you said in the very beginning, a lot of folks who share what their narrative has been and how yoga recovery has helped. And then you also include in each chapter practices for the reader to do that help integrate and that they can use in their lives, integrate the material and use as a tool on their path to recovery. And you also talk in the book about the importance of daily routines and bringing rhythm into our lives. And as we close our podcast here today, can you share with our listeners what your daily routines and rhythms look like and how they change over time and how they've helped you keep stable on your path of recovery? And feel free to also comment on anything else about the book that you think is important for folks to hear today.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. So it's really nice to hear you summarize the book. Because there's that saying, isn't there? You can't see the wood for the trees kind of thing. And that's how I sometimes feel being in the work for so long, looking into all the vast knowledge of the Vedas and trying to find a way to make it accessible and relevant and topical for the people today for this particular problem. And so when I asked you, like, have you had a look at the book? And the way you said that you had experienced the book in the time that you had was that you had recognized these points that I was making, then you went straight to the practices. Mm-hmm. And so I love that. I love to see how someone's going to digest what's in that book, because there's quite a lot. And the book does focus on daily routines as the action, the practical part of, like, what might you do now that you have an understanding of the perspective of the problem and solution from the Ayurvedic point of view. So it's not just theoretical, it's something that we do. And I'm going to say that in amongst all of that, what's unique, I think, to Yoga of Recovery is we come in with the gunas, because it's mostly mental, psychological issue. And then when we move into the embodied self, we come at it from the elements, the senses, the sense organs, and the organs of action, rather than go direct to those doshas, the biological forces. And the image that I offer, that homunculus, that is an image that really motivates me to make more conscious the instinctual embodied drives that I have. Because in a modern world where there's huge advertising, even our self-care can become this consumer selfhood. Like, we keep looking for new products to make us feel better, and it's like a self-care thing. And really, a lot of what I want to say about the truest healing is that it's free. Yoga and Ayurveda are leading you into the empowerment that lives within you at the level of being able to use your senses properly and tap into the power of your own breath, the inhale and the exhale, and then perhaps like a mantra to use within meditation. So if I was to say to you what has transformed my life outside of my recovery pathway, which is working with another and doing the house cleaning and uncover, discover, discard type of thing, it has been those things, the more subtle things. But what I get to action when I reach a point of the day where I just can't take it anymore, and that might be the situations that we're living through in a modern life, like the onslaught of the news stories. And I think probably all of us get that feeling of overwhelm. I can't take the next thing I'm supposed to do. And I will go and do things like take a shower, put oil on my skin, go for a walk. I will scrape my tongue, brush my teeth, drink some hot water. Like, I have something tangible that I can do that says I need to self-soothe, I need to do something. So in this book, a lot of it is around, upon awakening, these are some of the things that we do to, like, tend to the embodiment. And as we do that, we get to know ourselves better. We apply that little bit of routine self-care, and that stabilizes us to move through the day. And a big part of the book is to point out that there's different energies to different times of the day. So we don't need to, like, collapse when we feel some of the old stuff rising up again. We just have to recognize, here's the dip. The dip in my positivity, the dip in my energy, or here's my big reaction to this person or this unwanted event happening, and then go to use a certain set of tools. And maybe it is chopping some vegetables and making a meal and things like that. I do a lot of things. I love rose water. And so in my local yoga class, which I've just gone back to, and all honor to everybody that's been teaching the Hatha yoga class throughout COVID on Zoom and now going back to physical locations. And in Shavasana, she squirts just a little bit of that rose water on my face. And I receive that with such gratitude. That's one of the things about my life, is that I consciously pause to be grateful for the things that I see and taste and smell and touch. And I receive them like the most precious gift, because that soothes my mind, because my mind still can get caught up on why did what this happen, and it was 20 years ago. So I have to come to the moment of the rose water on my face and think, ha, there's something. and simple, small pleasures that I take the pause point to receive. And then when someone's in a crisis, that's what I'll offer them. Just put your hands on your knees and just feel into the temperature in your body. Like just trying to get them back to the moment, because the past and the future terrorize us. And so therefore, the daily routines are to honor and embody the totality of yourself today with simple action.
Well, thank you so much, Durga, for all that you do and your work and how you've put the book together. Congratulations on that. And of course, your courses, your programs. I know you've got online offerings as well. So for folks who want to check out you and your work, they can visit yogaofrecovery.com, and I'll include that in the show notes as well. Thanks a lot, Durga.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm really thankful that you were willing to have this conversation, and thanks for looking at the book. I appreciate it.
If you'd like to learn more about who we are and what we do, visit us at innerpeaceyogatherapy.com.